What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Get ready, Ohio. FanDuel, America's number one sports book, is coming to the Buckeye State. And to kick things off, you can get started with $100 in free bets as an early sign-up bonus. Plus, when you sign up today with promo code OHIOFD, you'll be all set when FanDuel goes live in Ohio. Then you can bet on all your favorite teams in all your favorite sports with $100 in free bets. Just download FanDuel's top-rated sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Ohio, this is your chance to get in on the action. Join today with promo code OHIOFD. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 or older and present in Ohio. Bonus issued in non-withdrawable free bets that expire 7 days after FanDuel accepts its first real money sports wager in Ohio, 1-1-23. Unique user identity verification required. Offer ends on the go live date. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G, because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification, and they're satisfying to scratch no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery Scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now, that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, joined today again by my friend Josh Reed. Josh, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, Ken. How you doing?
No complaints at all. A very entertaining draft, I thought, from the Ravens. We're going to talk a little bit about that and some of the traditional things and not so traditional things we saw from DaCosta and the Ravens organization in this one.
Yeah, sounds good.
Why don't you start us off? I know the idea was yours, and you have a lot of things I know to say about this draft.
Oh, yeah, it's just more of DaCosta kind of forging his own path as far as GM. He's still staying true to a lot of the, you know, core foundational things that his mentor and longtime friend, still friend, Ozzie Newsome imparted on him while he was the assistant GM and working his way through the ranks. But just for as far as from, you know, a value standpoint and understanding that and coveting picks, and you know, I like where I thought he was gonna trade back. Like I really thought he was gonna trade back with that second first round pick, and you know, like, oh, that's the typical Ozzie thing to do. You know, that's the Ravens always do that. They're gonna trade back. You know, I even almost queued up an article like Ravens trade pick to, you know, whoever. Oh wait, they stuck in pick. I gotta change that. It's just a lot of non-traditional things that he's doing to forge his own path while still staying true to the Ravens' values, core values.
Yeah, they did have an opportunity to trade back, I think. And, you know, it's a testament to Owe and who they think he can be that they stayed there. Because there were guys in the mid-rounds that could have helped the team. And they would have gotten, for that number 31 pick, they would have gotten, you know, a 600 JJ points. And you can see there's a lot of teams that would have fit somehow with a second and a fourth or a second and a third even, that would have been interesting in terms of maybe getting a different player. Maybe a Creed Humphrey or somebody else would have been a guy they would have picked up on the offensive line. But they stuck to a player that they obviously liked, which is one of the things in reflecting on this draft I like about hanging there at 31 and not trading the pick.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm done, I think.
I was gonna say I really kind of chapped my ass a little bit to the Chiefs landed Creed Humphrey. He's my favorite center in this draft, and I was like, oh, if we could have traded back, we could have, you know, got more picks and possibly could have got him. If we didn't give up 58 in the Orlando Brown trade, you know, we could have got him because the Chiefs ended up getting him at 63, and we would have picked at 58. And I was just like, oh man. But it's another thing that, like I said, like to me, the difference between DaCosta and Ozzie is that you know, DaCosta's not really afraid to take risk on, well, high ceiling potential guys.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we saw that. Somebody else asked me about Creed Humphrey today, and I said, you know, with the Ravens at 27, 31, and 94, they were basically out of the Creed Humphrey sweepstakes. They had to trade back to get him. If they'd reached for him at 27, that's how you lose a ton of value. Very true to the Ravens in that respect. Didn't reach for need at 31. And not that pass rushers, not a need. It is. But it's also one where they're not fulfilling it, I don't think, this year with Owe. I think, you know, he's a player who's going to help them more in years 2, 3, 4. I hope it's as quick as possible, his development, but the guy has a long way to go.
Yeah, I think that, he makes his, I guess, takes his most strides, I guess, as a rookie. For me, I envision him as a rookie as a situational pass rusher, similar to what we saw from Terrell Suggs in his rookie year. Kind of two opposite sides of the spectrum as far as one guy's uber athletic and the other guy was kind of like, thought as of not as much as of an athlete. I think, you know, Terrell Suggs kind of tested a little poorly coming out of college, whereas Owe tested off the charts.
Owe it will be the best athlete on the Ravens probably for a long time. He may be the best athlete the Ravens have ever had in terms of pure athletic profile. The thing I've said about him is that there will never be anybody who lines up against him who's going to be a better athlete. I think that's one of the interesting things, because Owe, once he learns to make the other guy make the first mistake and how to counter that, he's going to be unstoppable as a pass rusher. But that's asking a lot. It's multiple levels of development to get there. But it'll be fun to see if it can happen within a couple of years.
Yeah, and that's like one of the biggest things that I've seen, like the difference between Ozzie's tenure and Eric's tenure, at least early on. Eric's not afraid to take, for the longest time, you know, Ozzie was like one of those 3-4 year starter guys who produced in college and, you know, had a lot of experience. Whereas Eric DaCosta, he's done it 2 years in a row now. Patrick Queen last year, who was a 1 year starter and from LSU, a place where they never draft. And he drafted the first LSU guy ever in team history, and a guy who, like I said, didn't have extensive starting experience. And then you come back this year with a guy like Jason Owe. He only had like 7 or 9 sacks in his entire college career, none last year. But Eric's not afraid to bet on the upside, and that those traits right. that the player showed in that, you know, short amount of time will translate to greater success at the next level.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch Owe, and we've done the draft recap already and covered a lot of this. So I want to stay away from that, but you've nailed it on the head. Is that he's a very high ceiling, and probably also fairly a low floor player during the initial 4-year contract, 5-year contract if they can keep him for the entire time. It's just he's not a polished product in any way, shape, or form like most first round picks have been. I want to go to something different, and that is a difference I saw from the DaCosta of old, the DaCosta of new. Now, Eric got a lot of his reputation as a general manager from his small school scouting acumen, and they had a very broad net to find players at small schools like Judon and Williams and Webb, and I'm sure we can think of plenty of others, but those are three good ones to start with over the years that were at small schools. And I thought if ever there was a year where the Ravens could find some small school gems where no one else would find them, this would be the year, because the guys didn't play last year at small schools, but the Ravens end up taking 7 Power 5 guys, 1 Group of 5 guy in Stevens, who played SMU, and 0 small school draft picks.
And so I think that's part of like a two-pronged thing. So part of it is a lot of the small schools, like you were talking about, they had their seasons delayed until the spring. Sure. So they're playing right now. So a lot of those guys that Ravens ordinarily would have been scouting in the fall, they couldn't do that because those guys are playing right now. A few guys that opted to go pro instead of playing in the spring, a guy who I thought they had their eye on is Spencer Brown from Northern Iowa. I thought, he was a possibility at 94 before the Bills took him, right before they took sucks. Cleveland. Yeah, I was so upset. I was like, oh my gosh, the Bills spite me at every turn. And then
twice with Doyle later, too.
Yes, yes. Really, I was just like, I feel like the Ravens were going to take that tackle, but then they just came in and swooped right in. Like, you guys just signed Darrell Williams to an extension, wherever the right tackle. They had an amazing puff piece on him about how he came, started from humble beginnings, and then you go and draft a guy like Spencer Brown. We don't even need him. Like, we need a right tackle. And then another guy who I had my eye on was David Moore, the guard center from Grambling State. I thought he was definitely going to be on the Ravens' radar. I think he ended up actually going undrafted. I thought he was going to be at least like a mid-round pick. A lot of the guys are playing in the spring right now. I feel like that kind of hurt the whole small school scouting thing.
I mean, it obviously did. They didn't take anyone who didn't play in the fall, and that included opt-outs or anybody. And the Ravens had big needs to fill. That's one of my other objections about their strange way of doing business, we'll call it, probably objection to the way the Ravens handled this draft. But they just did not go over any of the small school guys. But, I mean, just the fact that they didn't play, the Ravens are supposed to be better than all the other teams at keeping track of this small school talent. It's out there. It was available in the draft. Those guys, for the most part, the ones who were good already declared for the draft, and they could have been had, but the Ravens didn't draft a bunch of them.
Now, do you think that might be a byproduct of the Ravens kind of their scouting department kind of being picked clean over the years? Every time somebody gets a promotion to us, where they always want to take some of the Ravens guys with them, and those might have been some people who are on this Costas inner circle. I mean, I'm just speculating here, but
Douglas say,
yeah, might have been part of an inner circle and like kind of took those. I don't want to say tricks of the trade, but like that working knowledge of how to, of the having trained eye to find the small school guys with them out of the building.
I mean, I don't doubt that some of it has leaked out into the rest of the league, but the methodology and how you go about it shouldn't have left if DaCosta is still there. I mean, Gregory Sinat didn't work out. Zach Sealer did. It just didn't happen to work out for the Ravens. I mean, they've been really good at going after these small school guys and taking their swings with them as necessary. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't, of course. But they didn't do it this year. And it's only 8 picks. It's a small sample size. But it was different than what my expectation was, given how much other teams. And by the way, this was true all over the league. The percentage of Power 5 and Group of 5 schools were both way up, and small school prospects were way down in terms of this draft. And the Ravens followed right along with the rest of the league.
Do you think that might be because since he's like the general manager now, and 2018 was the last year before he took over, and that's when they had Sealer from Ferris State. You think because he's the kind of the big picture guy now, he's the GM, he doesn't really have his pulse on the small school scouting aspect as he once did?
I would be surprised if he did not continue to direct it either very closely. I mean, if it's his baby, then he would either continue to direct it very closely. You move up in any organization a couple of times, you don't lose your will to oversee that thing. I'll tell a little story. I don't know how relevant people are going to find these, but as an actuary, I originally was the jock who ran all the pricing runs for us and used our actuarial software to calculate pricing. And then you move up into the management, and your first thing, at first, you're kind of working closely with people and you understand the software well and you can go directly in it. Then you move up another level and you really lose touch with the software. But you can still look at it and see what's wrong quickly in terms of the output. And I think that's where DaCosta at furthest is right now, is he understands what's not working if something comes to him and it doesn't look right. I think he knows exactly how to direct those scouts. I don't think he's been lost from the process, really. So, I could see the point, but I think I was just surprised that they didn't have a small school pick in a year like this.
Yeah, me too. I thought if any team was going to capitalize, it would have been the Ravens.
All right, your turn. You got another thing you didn't like about this one?
Did we already touch on the receiver thing? I know we touched on it.
Go ahead.
Before the show. Okay. So as we all know, he kind of made national headlines with this whole insulted by the whole perception of the wide receiver depth chart in the pre-draft presser, aka the Liar's Luncheon, more comically known. And then all that insulted by the way we like our guys and this and that. And then with your first round pick, you take a receiver. And it's just like, to me, that was such a masterful misdirection on his part. Like, yeah, and we're gonna lull the other teams in a false sense of security, thinking we're gonna do the typical Ravens thing and not value of the receiver position early on in the draft. And you end up taking a receiver anyways. And I think it just so happened that the guy that they wanted most, that they felt like was going to be in the range, fell to them. And it was kind of, I wouldn't necessarily say, BPA, because maybe they may have had, somebody a different position rated a little bit higher, just as much. We don't know. But I just feel like the board fell perfectly for them. He even said that in his pre-first round presser. And I just think that whole misdirection of the whole insulted thing really kind of threw us off the scent of what they were end up going to do anyways.
Yeah, I don't know how much it threw other teams off, and that's really what matters. Other teams are out there and they're drafting and using their own philosophy, and I guarantee you they're not buying any of that crap that DaCosta is slinging at the Liar's Lunch. But it was interesting, and I think it's more of an interesting thing that you make a statement like that with the chance to kind of back yourself into a corner when. The people who are really on notice now are the 2019 draftees, the Brown and Boykin.
Boykin
especially, in terms of getting their performance up or perhaps not being on the team, because the Ravens cannot keep all these guys. They may trade somebody. I suppose they could trade a Duvernay. You probably could trade Boykin. You might have to try and turn Boykin into a tight end, which I think is probably really wasting a lot of what he brings to the table in terms of his value on the outside. It's interesting. I kind of would have preferred he just was mum entirely, because I don't think there was any misdirection value to what he did. I think he just may have pissed off some of the people a little bit more that are in the building already. And obviously they're looking over their shoulders now. You have to be. And if you're Marquise Brown, you got to be wondering not if the Ravens are going to keep you for the next 2 years or 3 years, even with the additional 1 year, but whether they have a real interest in signing you long term. You just signed two receivers or just drafted two receivers. You may not have a long term future with the Ravens. And in the case of Miles Boykin, you're worried about 2021. You might not be around for then. I think I would have preferred if he had said nothing. The linemen were already in fear of their jobs. Now the wide receivers are going to go to camp. They're going to have, I'm sure, a very competitive camp. There may be some unhappy players among that group.
I definitely think, I mean, that was like kind of like the first, like during the pre-draft presser, that was like kind of the first time we kind of saw Eric kind of get a little irritated, because he knew the receiver question was coming, but he was like, look, you guys are acting like the guys we have in the building are chopped liver. And he's like, you guys take more swings at receiver. I've been taking more swings and higher swings at receiver. Like we said, pre-draft show, like the only receiver he's taken lower than the fourth round since he's he's been the GM was Prochet, and you know he got Wallace during this cycle, and he's being touted as one of the biggest steals of the draft because he had a second, third round grade, and he fell all the way to the fourth round. So he's taking more swings and higher swings on more highly touted players, but he's just like, hey, look, you guys, like I could kind of feel the frustration in his voice a little bit when he answered that question.
Yeah, it's it was interesting the way it came out. I guess I just don't put a lot of value in the liar's lunch. I just wish he hadn't said it. I don't think it had any misdirection value. It's just a matter of pissing off the players who are in house. Yeah. Go to my next thing here. I want to talk about two positions that got overlooked in this draft, and I think one of them, it may have been a case of the best player available was never the best player available they thought. And the other case, I really am lost in terms of what they did. So at offensive tackle and defensive line, they have both places a big need. And they did sign Alejandro Villanueva. Really shows you just how much a vacancy at a position will cost you in terms of cap to fix it for a single year. And it's going to end up costing the Ravens, what, about $8 million, I think it is.
2 years, $14 million, $8 million guaranteed this year.
$8 million guaranteed. So they cut him next year. They save the last six. That's his base salary for next year, which could happen, particularly if he doesn't play well or they don't really have a spot for him. But that's the problem. Stanley's injury has cost the Ravens a lot of money, and they didn't take a developmental tackle. We will never know if they would have taken Spencer Brown over Cleveland at 94. It certainly seemed like a reasonable thing at the time to me. To you as well?
Yeah, most certainly, yeah.
Yeah, or if they might have taken Doyle later. The Ravens have an enormous bias for long arms. So it's not just me, guys, by the way. It's the Ravens as well. If you look at all the guys they've drafted to play tackle, they've all been long arm guys since Michael Orr, who was at 33.5 inches, and that didn't really work out. If you look back otherwise, the only guy they've drafted since 2011 with shorter than 33.5 inch arms was blanking on the name, the center, Ryan Jensen, mm-hmm. who they never had any intention of keeping a tackle, although his draft position was tackle. Anyway, let me get to the real point here, and I'm sorry I'm taking so long getting this out. Here, but the Ravens have a ton of age on the defensive line, and whatever they do to solve their holes next year is going to cost them a ton of cap money, very similar to the situation with Villanueva this year. And it'll be in a year where they need to transfer money from defense to offense. I thought overlooking the defensive line in this draft is one of my biggest objections. I can understand not having the value picks at offensive tackle. I can't understand why they didn't try and draft a defensive lineman, particularly with their last pick, with a couple guys still on the board.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple guys that both defensive line and offensive tackle I would have liked instead of, Ben Mason. And I'm not poo-pooing on Ben Mason, but I was like, I think Stone Forsythe was still on the board, and there were a couple defensive tackles, I believe the one from BYU.
Iris Tonga.
Yeah, the one that the Bears ended up taking in, like, the sixth or seventh round. I was like, oh my gosh, like there were so many guys who I feel like you could have gotten that, are probably going to sign elsewhere as priority free agents because, you passed on them. And I'm just like, those guys would have served more, because like I've talked about it all offseason. It's like, man, the Ravens need to get younger on the defensive line this offseason.
Yeah, they had another guy there. They missed out on the pit.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification. And they're satisfying to scratch no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery Scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.
At Lowe's, we're your go-to for great gardening values every day. That's why we've lowered our price on select bagged mulch, now starting at just $2.88 a bag. Mulch helps prevent weeds and retains moisture. And when you put it down around trees, shrubs, and flower beds, you'll see how beautiful it makes your outdoor space. Just in time to welcome back family and friends. Shop online and pick up in store. Lowe's, home to the best part of summer. Selection and product availability vary by location. While supplies last, U.S. only. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
defensive lineman Twyman. Now, I know there were questions about did he really stay in shape and things like that. So that's a serious concern. But they had a fifth-round pick that could have gambled on that. And he had 12 sacks before he opted out in 2020. So it's really a question. If you had an opportunity to get a good pass rusher, they also, the other position they passed on, they had a chance, one of the early chances that would have really made sense, to draft Barmore at either 27 or 31. He lasted until, I think, 37, 38.
Yeah, the Patriots traded up to get him.
Yeah. So, he was the best defensive lineman in the draft by leaps and bounds. He was head and shoulders above everybody else in the draft. And, a guy that they could have taken with either of those first two picks. And while I agree that Bateman was a plus pick, I'm not sure Barmore, from my perspective and from what he would have saved the team in cap, wouldn't have been two pluses. And I'll go one step further. I think if they knew that they were going to get the fourth round pick, help me out for
Tylan Wallace.
If they were going to get Tylan Wallace in the fourth round, if they knew that up front, then I think they probably would have drafted Barmore with one of those first two picks.
Then Davion Nixon lasted to the fifth round. And I was just like, man, all these defensive tackles that I like are falling, and they just keep passing over them. Like, when is it going to stop?
Yeah, it was odd to see. All right, so that's my second objection to this. What do you have as additional observations or interesting?
Ozzie historically liked, going to the SEC, particularly out of Alabama. And what I've noticed from Eric in the last, since he's been GM, he's not afraid to go outside to the other Power 5 conferences. He's drafted, I don't know how many players from Oklahoma. And then I think he's taken like two or three from Ohio State the past couple of years. So he's definitely not afraid to go, like I said, go against the traditional grain. Whereas the Ravens historically loved Alabama guys or if they were going to go ACC, Miami guys. I just think that kind of like broadening that net and kind of like not just focusing in on those preferred schools and kind of like casting that wider net, I think has really helped them during his tenure as GM as well.
Okay, so a wider net within the Power 5, because they did take 7 of 8 picks still from the Power 5, but you're saying
not just SEC guys. I think Ben Cleveland was the only SEC guy that he took this time around.
All right. I like that. I wish that had meant that they got a small school player, of course, but it didn't this time around. I'll give you the other thing, and this is one thing I really liked about staying true to who the Ravens are, is they don't look just to this year to try and figure out what value is going to look like. And so with the cornerback position, very well set this year, no doubt about it. But they've got four guys that are coming due. They've got Tavon Young, who's playing for his contractual life, for playing for the last year's contract, this year at a lower salary. So we'll see if that works out. Hopefully he can stay healthy. They've got Jimmy Smith, who is in the fifth consecutive, it seems like, last year of his tenure with the Ravens. But we'll see if he gets signed. But he is in the last year contractually. Marcus Peters will be in the last year's contract in 2022, which makes him an easy cut as well. Same as Young. They need a lot of money in cap for the offense, for Jackson, for Andrews' contract. So it's quite possible that he'll be gone. And then the other is Anthony Averett, who is a fourth-year player. I think the Ravens maybe either don't – they probably like what they have, but they're also do not seem willing to commit to, say, a mid-range contract that would guarantee his security and give the Ravens some confidence in having a good cornerback down the line. But something like 3 years, $6 million, I think Averett jumps on that probably at this point. No guarantee he gets that in a competitive market next year.
Yeah, if they could land him at cost, I think they definitely would re-up on that. But they definitely drop with an eye towards the future at their position because they've really prioritized the secondary in these last 3-4 years. Really, look, going back 2017, 5 years or whatever, back when they got to Tony Jefferson and Eric Weddle. So secondary is a priority, and they love investing. I think now they're at the point where they want to invest more draft capital, more say than cap dollars, because they know they're going to spend on the offense here very, very soon.
Right. I would agree with that. And they got two guys. Both of them could end up being cornerbacks. I mean, to start with Wade, I think he's clearly the heir apparent to Tavon Young.
Same here.
Maybe this year and almost definitely next year. And as much as I love Tavon, his inability to stay on the field, I think, really makes the last year of his contract very unlikely to be played out at that price.
Yeah, I definitely think even if Tavon does stay, I think we could see a situation where they almost split time manning the slot just because, you know, they might want to preserve Tavon, or God forbid he suffers another injury or setback in his recovery, that they might even want to split time between Wade and Young, just to kind of like, and also Wade might even see a good amount of time on the field anyways, because a lot of teams are rolling out those 4 and 5 receiver sets sometimes, yeah, especially in Pittsburgh. So would you rather have, you know, the safety come down or have 2 stud slot corners? And I think they'd rather do the latter.
Yeah, last year they were not really prepared with 4 cornerbacks for those 2, you know, the games that they see it. But they saw it in 2019. They saw it from Arizona. In 2020, they certainly saw it from Pittsburgh in both games. They ended up, it was Terrell Bonds played a significant amount of safety in that first game in Baltimore, and frankly contributed to the loss in that game. And I think the Ravens would much rather have a second slot corner. It might, even that might not be enough. Brandon Stevens, the other pick they got, very interesting guy, and I think it's much more of a need pick to make sure that their free safety situation is settled. But Brandon Stevens, I don't know what you've watched of him at SMU so far, but he played situationally by down at 3 different positions per game. So he's out there playing free safety, then they'll move him to slot corner on a play, and then they'll move him to outside corner on a play. You know, the only Raven who's even been similar is Lardarius Webb, who played slot corner and outside corner within the same game. So he'd move in to play nickel when they brought on a third corner back into the game. But he never played safety in those games. And then he played safety later in his career in a different mm-hmm. season. They've never had anybody with Brandon Stevens' versatility at the college level used that way in the pro game. Be interesting to see how they do that.
Yeah, Eric DeCosta even said that, you know, that we view him as a free safety, so I think that's a position that he starts out at. But if they need another outside corner in a pinch, or if something happens and the opposing offense rolls out some kind of crazy alignment, I think they'd have the confidence in him to, you know, send him out there either on an island or maybe even in a slot.
Yeah, he's a big guy. So when other teams spread 4, including a tight end like Kansas City does with Kelce, and that's another team where you're almost facing 10 personnel in that situation. Mm-hmm. If Kelce's the only tight end on the field, they have 3 wide receivers, 1 running back. You really kind of almost want 4 cornerbacks covering, or you want to have a very big safety. And I think Stevens gives you more of that ability to cover a guy in the slot like a tight end. He's a bigger guy at 213 and 6'1", so you get some of that. Wade is an interesting player to me because he's got some of the longest arms you'll ever see for a cornerback at 33.5 inches. His arm length is the same as Tevin Jenkins, who is the right tackle that the Ravens, and one of the reasons I think they might have passed on him was arm length.
Yeah, most definitely. Did you hear that the Bears are going to have him play left tackle?
I heard that. It's such a stretch. I briefly tweeted about that today, but you know, there was some national guy who came out, Doug Farrar, I think it was, who said that, you know, as much as I like Jenkins, this doesn't make any sense. And I completely agree. He makes sense in the Ravens system with those shorter arms to play on the right side because the tackle requirements are less. You know, the tackle run blocking requirements are fairly simple, and it really did not make sense, the Bears moving him over to left tackle and cutting Leno, who's been serviceable, you know, for a number of years and been very durable. Surprising move by the Bears.
And they let go of Charles Leno, so it's do or die for Jenkins on the left side now.
All right. What else do you have to say about this draft? Anything else at the high level that was interesting to you?
No, it's like I said, just taking the swing on the high potential guy more so than the proven thing. Like even with Stevens, you're kind of taking a chance on a potential that he projects more so than, you know, you've proven that he's done this full time in college or done a particular thing full time in college. I just think that DeCosta's putting a lot more stock in potential and less in safer picks than Ozzie did during his tenure.
Yeah, I this was not an impressive year for the Ravens in terms of value on their picks. I thought that, you know, it's okay, but and sometimes it's really hard to say this so soon. These guys have not played an NFL game yet, and I'm already discouraged with value. But I'll tell you what I mean. I really mean economy and not value. In the case of Stevens, I think they probably could have had him at least in the 4th round. I'm not sure if they could have had him in the 5th round. It's not. I don't think everybody was gaga-ing over this guy. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's some other team sniffing around who wanted him at free safety, and, you know, Stevens tipped him off or whatever. But it seems like any kind of fear they had, they manufactured it in that room by themselves rather than on the market. And I'm not convinced that that they did a good job of assessing value there.
Yeah, there are a couple picks like that. Like I said, the Mason pick, the Stevens pick. And I was just like, whoa, like you could have got that guy way later. Like if they would have taken Tylan Wallace at 104 and Stevens at 131 or whatever,
you wouldn't be complaining.
I wouldn't think nothing of it. You know, I'd be like, okay, you know, make typical fourth round pick, you know, special teams guy, whatever, whatever. But you take the guy at the bottom of the third where there's like plenty of other guys. So I'm like, whoa, that's kind of a bit of a stretch there. I don't know if anybody else was looking at him like that.
To me, even if you swap Wade and Stevens, I still say, that makes all kinds of sense. Stevens is a five, Wade's a three. Wade had the great, you know, 2019 at slot corner. And it completely makes sense based on the Ravens' need. It's a need pick. It's a value pick. I'd like it a lot more. But that's not the way the board fell. And they got a great value, I think, in Wade. And they got kind of a meh value in Stevens. They traded around a little bit late. They dropped down a level, reset some of their board into 2022, which I thought was pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Same here.
Yeah. So nice to get a pick in a year where you're gonna know more about the board. So that's positive. But I also thought they undid some of that when they drafted Ben Mason, because I have to believe he was probably going to be available as a UDFA if they wanted him.
Yeah. Yeah. Same here. And then also I was like, man, if you're going to trade pick 210, just imagine all those defensive tackles, offensive tackles that were still on the board at that point, like the developmental guys. Like, man, if we were going to trade that away, like.
You could have had Tonga for sure. I want to see where Twyman went now to see if he went after 210. I got to find this. Okay, well, I won't bother myself with it, I don't think, right now, but except I will.
You know, while you're looking that up, I'll just one more non-draft
199.
Yep. Okay, 199. Okay, yeah. So yeah, he probably would have been gone. One last, I guess, non-draft related thing as far as the difference between Eric DaCosta and Ozzie was that Eric is kind of not afraid to take more risks in terms of not just draft when it comes to the draft, but also like free agency and trades. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, sometimes they work out, like, you know, like with Marcus Peters, Calais Campbell. Other times, you know, via trade. Other times, you know, as far as free agency signings, Errol Thomas didn't work out. Paid him a lot of money for a 1-year rental, and you know, yeah, he made the Pro Bowl, but wasn't the kind of return that you were expecting an original investment.
No.
And then some people view the Yanni Ngakoue trade as a, you know, as a fail or whatever, but at least it was a try. And the way that the Ravens covet picks and move up and down the board, he's going to recoup that lost draft capital anyway. So I didn't see that really as a failure, but some people saw that, like, oh, we didn't get hardly any sacks out of him, it's a failure. But like I said, at least he's willing to take those kind of risks. So I think that's pretty cool on his part.
Right. I think that was a good risk. And I'll give you another good risk that I've liked in the last few days. Bunch of people been on me on Twitter about this, but I was like, you know, there's no reason for them to sign either Justin Houston or Alejandro Villanueva until at least May 3rd. And I get all this, we have to win right now. You don't understand, Ken. We have to win right now. The truth of the matter is Eric DaCosta stuck to the Ravens principles here and did exactly the right thing.
Yep.
And we don't have to wait for that to be proved right. We know right now on May 3rd, May 5th, actually, with this these moves having been made, that he already made the right move because he didn't surrender the pick to do it.
Yeah, we all knew what was coming. It was just like, you know, that whole living all based on fear. Like, oh, we got to do this now. And like, I remember reading an article like, would Justin Houston be worth the fourth round pick? Like, you know, like I was like, oh, well, in theory, yes, but. For the Ravens perspective, no. You can have the guy after the draft. If the guy is not in a rush to sign before the draft, then why sign him before the draft? Just because you think another team's going to come in and swoop him off your feet? No. Like, you should just stick to your core principles because it's worked so well for you in the past. Just stick to it. And now you got Alejandro Villanueva 2-3 days after the compensatory pick formula, and you don't give another pick for him. So, bam.
Yeah, I think when you look at who's manufacturing that interest before the draft, I think it was all the attempt to manufacture it was all his agent.
Yeah.
I don't think the notion that, you know, oh, there's 11 suitors out here and they're all going to do it. I mean, we saw what was true with the Orlando Brown thing. No, I think most people had a higher price tag on Orlando Brown than a middle of the second round total value in terms of JJ points. You know, most people are saying, oh, let's get a low first. And the people who are the crazies are saying, let's get a first and a third, or let's get a first and a second, or, you know, whatever it might be. But people generally thought we'd get more than that. The market is generally less receptive to giving up a draft pick to a player you also have to pay full market value to. And they're definitely paying full market value to Alejandro Villanueva, in my opinion. And they didn't have to pay a draft pick, fortunately. And I've been really against paying both. And I'm in the same exact spot with Justin Houston.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't mind a Houston signing at the right price at this point. It was one of those, like, the same kind of thing that they signed Sammy Watkins for, one of those heavily incentive-laden contracts. Mm-hmm. I'd be okay with that. I'd be perfectly fine with that. But I'm more in the camp of, like, look, you know, you addressed the position twice in the draft. Yeah, I would like a Houston. You know, if it doesn't happen, I'm not heartbroken over it. I do like the guys that they picked up in the draft. I just trust the Ravens to have a plan at that position. Like, certain positions, I think they're going to have a plan for. Right tackle, was I scared during the draft that they didn't at least take a developmental tackle? Yeah, sure. But as you can see, days after the draft, just the Ravens always have a plan in place. Whether it's Eric DaCosta calling the shots, Ozzie Newsome calling the shots, the Ravens are always going to have a plan in place.
Yeah, that's a great point to finish on, because I think we found that even though the Ozzie plan might differ from the DaCosta plan, I think we have seen that the Ravens have had a plan, generally speaking. And hopefully they end up looking back at this draft and saying, hey, this was a really good one. We got a couple stars out of this. And I hope they really get three guys out of this draft who are well above average talent, given the fact that they traded Orlando Brown to build up some additional draft capital. So not just three starters, but I'd like to see Cleveland, Oway, and Bateman all, you know, maybe two out of three be stars, and then get some real value incrementally from Wade and Stevens, and perhaps Wallace as well would be another reasonable one. Where do you stand on that? What's a win from this draft for you?
A win of the 8-man draft class, I feel like of at least half of them, you know, become, you know, star. I wouldn't say starters to stars, but, like, you know, starters to solid contributors. Like, I'm not expecting, like, I know people are really hyping up the Wallace pick right now, even more so than a Bateman pick. But I just feel like if you can get solid contributions from at least four of those guys, and even, you know, upper echelon contribution from a guy like a Ben Cleveland and a Rashad Bateman, just because they invested the high capital in him, I'd be perfectly fine with that. If Tylan Wallace, you know, averages only, I don't want to guesstimate his target share, but if he only averages, you know, under, you know, between 300 to 400 yards, you know, in his career, I'm like, with the Ravens, I'm fine with that. As long as, you know, his first down conversion rate is high, or if he catches touchdowns, if he's a consistent chain mover, all the things that he did well in college, if he does that at the pros, maybe not as often, but at a high level, I'm cool with that.
Yeah. Good blocker. I want to see that always and yep, be supporting the run game. So, I think it was a fun draft. We had a real lot of fun watching it with a bunch of different people, a panel the first night and then the second night. And how did you spend your time watching this draft?
I enjoyed listening to you guys do your thing, but I also we did a live stream for Baltimore Beatdown, and that was really fun. I got to hop on. So I was at work when the draft first started for the first and second night. But then as soon as I got home, I was reacting to the picks with some of the guys, and I was watching it with my son on my knee. So it was pretty nice.
All right. All right, man. Always great to have you on, Josh. Tell folks where they can find your work.
You can find my work at BaltimoreBeatdown.com and on Twitter at JoshReed907.
All right. Outstanding. Folks, we're getting into that season where there's lots of time to do film study shorts. So if you have an idea, you're passionate about something, particularly about the draft, this was actually Josh's idea to talk about, you know, what traditional things and what non-traditional things, what misdirection from DaCosta came out of this draft. Please send me some bullets on it. We'll do it very quickly. And I always enjoy talking football with somebody who's either passionate, knowledgeable, or both. Thank you for being both, Josh. Really appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
Talk to you next time on Film Study.
Breaking up is hard to do, but when it comes to your wireless carrier, you should have left a while ago. You deserve better. Xfinity Mobile. Break free from the big three.
Get unlimited with 5G included for $30 a month when you get four lines on Xfinity Mobile. Prices may vary and are subject to change. Reduce speeds at 20 gigabytes per line.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. every day grab-and-go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification. And they're satisfying to scratch, no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery Scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now, that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.